AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. Four-term D.C. Mayor Marion Barry died early this morning after collapsing outside his home last night. He was 78. Incoming Mayor Muriel Bowser says Barry was an inspiration to many in the city.
He has left a strong legacy for so many young people to follow.
Barry's legacy includes a stint in prison after being caught on video smoking crack in 1990. He resumed his political career, elected to his fourth term in office, and then elected a number of times to city council. Barry was also found guilty of failing to file tax returns for 5 years, censored twice by the city council for steering a contract to a former girlfriend, and accepting cash from contractors. A flood warning for parts of the Buffalo, New York area. National Weather Service meteorologist Bruce Terry says 6 to 7 feet of snow translates to up to 1/2 foot of water.
There is as much as 5 to 6 inches of water trapped in this snow, and as the temperatures rise and this snow melts, that water will be released, and that will cause some flooding. Likely first flooding will occur in the urban areas and then possibly into the streams and creeks a little bit later on.
Erie County Executive Mark Poloncarz told reporters yesterday the melting was already underway.
We do know from actually traveling around the community today that some of the areas that had 7 feet of snow appear now to have 6 feet of snow. So the water is disappearing, whether it's actually melting in the ground or sublimating in the air. The water is going somewhere.
Barricades are up around the building where a grand jury has been considering whether to indict Ferguson, Missouri police officer Darren Wilson in the August shooting death of 18-year-old Michael Brown. Reverend Jimmy Matthews says hatred is a real problem in the St. Louis suburb.
When you have hatred in our evil heart, you're not going to be content with peace because your mindset is to be hating people and creating havoc.
Two people were arrested overnight outside the Ferguson police station. This is AP Radio News. The Afghan parliament makes it official, approving a security pact that will keep 12,000 U.S. and NATO troops in the country after the withdrawal of combat forces at the end of this year. Shukriya Barzai, a member of parliament, says her country needs strong ties with the U.S. in order to prosper.
I believe this is very important for the future of Afghanistan. If I want my kids and millions of other children live in prosperity, we need strong partnership between Afghanistan and U.S.
During the vote, Afghan lawmakers made no mention of President Obama's expansion of the U.S. role in fighting militants in that country. An Iranian official says it may be time to shift the focus of the Vienna talks from trying to reach a nuclear agreement to talking about extending Monday's deadline again. Since landing in Vienna on Thursday, Secretary of State John Kerry has met repeatedly with Iran's foreign minister. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
The traditional light bulb, a groundbreaking invention in 1879. It's time we switch to longer-lasting Energy Star light bulbs. They're more efficient than the old bulbs, like a text message is more efficient than a carrier pigeon. And they cut down on our energy costs. Because in our own groundbreaking age, we deserve a light bulb that saves us some cash. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me.
Stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking to me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes twice a day. I have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
Hi, everybody. This is David and Nikki Nellis, Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
Sunday, Todd English. You know him. He's the celeb chef. He'll be in studio. And Dory Greenspan's got a new baking cookbook. She'll tell us all about it.
That's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday at 11 right here on 1500 AM.
No. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Offutt Kerman. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Larry Latow and Mike Mercurio. We have a great line of guests on our show today, including Tom Dierlein, who's the president and CEO of Thundercat Technology, Phil Panzarella, the president of CPS, Mike Bernstein, the president of MCW Solutions, and Jennifer Bernstein, the founder of a company called Charmed Bar. First up is a young man by the name of Tom Dierlein, who is the president of a company called Thundercat Technology. Tell us a little bit about Thundercat, Tom.
Well, Thundercat Technology is a service-disabled, veteran-owned small business that sells technology solutions and products to government and organizations. We're what's classically been called a VAR, value-added reseller, and these days it's a little sexier to call them a systems integrator or a solution provider.
How long has the company been around?
We were founded in April of 2008, so we're just over 6 years old.
And how big or small today?
We're just shy of 50 folks, and we're just around $350 million
in top line. So 2008, we were just heading into a recession. So what was it like to start a business at that time?
I mean, keep in mind that, you know, 99% of our business is federal government, FedIT, and that's an $80 billion a year industry. So even if it went down a little bit or up a little bit, hopefully you can be smart enough to make some money in an $80 billion a year company,
yeah.
$80 billion a year industry.
Why did you want to start this business in the first place?
Well, I'm a bit of a serial entrepreneur, and throughout my career, I've kind of gone to smaller and smaller. I've done a couple of startups. I was approached about this idea, and I saw it as a unique opportunity, and so I partnered with four gentlemen, and we started the company.
What was the scariest moment for you?
I think the scariest moment is when you take a large part of your life savings and you start signing bank documents that say we can come and take your house. That's a scary moment.
That's a scary moment for a lot of people, scary enough that they won't do it. What is it about you, your makeup, that allows you to take these kind of risks?
I think in terms of you certainly have to jump off that cliff, and any entrepreneur or person that started a company at some point takes that jump. In terms of what makes me different, I think I had been spending my entire career waiting for this moment, and so when it came time to jump, I was prepared.
So is this? Are you an experienced jumper? I mean, where's the first time you took a risk? And take us all the way back.
So, I mean, after I got out of the military, I went to work for Johnson & Johnson, and I thought it was mailroom to boardroom, and I would, you know, grow up and be CEO of Johnson & Johnson one day, you know, because they had the credo and it was America's most admired company and the value set matched mine. But then I started a career and I left J&J and started a career in technology and in sales. I was part of a company, the first dot-com boom, a company called NetGravity, which technically I think is still now part of Google. I went to a seven-person startup, helped grow that to 125 people and a successful acquisition. So I slowly but surely worked, you know, to fewer and fewer people until I actually became one of the co-founders, and we got going.
You tell us a story about your early childhood and the newspaper dynasty in your family.
Yeah,
the newspaper delivery dynasty. Tell us about that one.
So I'm 8 out of 9. So one of the youngest out of 9 kids, and my oldest sister Mary started with a newspaper, and then Charlie had another newspaper adjacent to it. So for basically about 20 plus years. We just kept handing the paper route down. And it was like kindergarten, first grade. Like, it was early, early days. I was delivering newspapers, and I was working for my sister, Susie. And I remember today, I got paid $2 for...
Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio broadcast from the offices of Offutt Kerman. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Larry Latow and Mike Curio. We have a great line of guests on our show today, including Tom Dierlein, who's the president and CEO of Thundercat Technology, Phil Panzarella, the president of CPS, Mike Bernstein, the president of MCW Solutions, and Jennifer Bernstein, the founder of a company called Charmed Bar. First up is a young man by the name of Tom Dierlein, who is the president of a company called Thundercat Technology. Tell us a little bit about Thundercat, Tom.
Well, Thundercat Technology is a services-abled, veteran-owned small business that sells technology solutions and products to government and organizations. We're what's classically been called a VAR, value-added reseller, and these days it's a little sexier to call them a systems integrator or a solution provider.
How long has the company been around?
We were founded in April of 2008, so we're just over 6 years old.
And how big or small? Today
we're just shy of 50 folks, and we're just around $350 million.
So in 2008, we were just heading into a recession. So what was it like to start a business at that time?
I mean, keep in mind that, you know, 99% of our business is federal government, Fed IT, and that's an $80 billion a year industry. So even if it went down a little bit or up a little bit, hopefully you can be smart enough to make some money in $80 billion a year company.
Yeah.
$80 billion a year industry.
Why did you want to start this business in the first place?
Well, I'm a bit of a serial entrepreneur, and throughout my career, I've kind of gone to smaller and smaller. I've done a couple of startups. I was approached about this idea, and I saw it as a unique opportunity, and so I partnered with four gentlemen, and we started the company.
What was the scariest moment for you?
I think the scariest moment is when you take a large part of your life savings and you start signing bank documents that say we can come and take your house. That's a scary moment.
That's a scary moment for a lot of people, scary enough that they won't do it. What is it about you, your makeup, that allows you to take these kind of risks?
I think in terms of you certainly have to jump off that cliff, and any entrepreneur or person that started a company at some point takes that jump. In terms of what makes me different, I think I had been spending my entire career waiting for this moment, and so when it came time to jump, I was prepared.
So is this are you an experienced jumper? I mean, where's the first time you took a risk? And take us all the way back.
So, I mean, after I got out of the military, I went to work for Johnson & Johnson, and I thought it was mailroom to boardroom, and I would, you know, grow up and be CEO of Johnson & Johnson one day, you know, because they had the credo, and it was America's most admired company, and the value set matched mine. But then I started a career, and I left J&J and started a career in technology and in sales. I was part of a company, the first dot-com boom, a company called NetGravity, which technically I think is still now part of Google. I went to a 7-person startup, helped grow that to 125 people and a successful acquisition. So I slowly but surely worked, you know, to fewer and fewer people until I actually became one of the co-founders, and we got going.
You tell us a story about your early childhood and the newspaper dynasty in your family.
Yeah.
The newspaper delivery dynasty. Tell us about that one.
So I'm 8 out of 9. So one of the youngest out of 9 kids. And my oldest sister, Mary, started with a newspaper, and then Charlie had another newspaper adjacent to it. So for basically about 20-plus years, we just kept handing the paper route down. And it was like kindergarten, first grade. Like, it was early days. I was delivering newspapers, and I was working for my sister, Susie. And I remember today, I got paid $2 for delivering the whole route and $1 if I delivered half the route. And then, you know, this went on for years. And then eventually it was my turn to take over the paper route, and I went and did collections. This is back when you went door-to-door, knocked, and you collected your $2.50. And after I paid the newspaper, it was Gannett. I had $30. I said, "Oh man, you know, I was getting paid $2 a day. She's making $30 a week. I need to be in management."
So that's where it began.
That's right. That's right.
What separates an entrepreneur from everybody else, in your opinion? Why are you different?
There's a lot of reasons why different entrepreneurs are different than others. But the first thing is what you just said. You have to have that courage to take that leap. Because there's plenty of people that have good business ideas or would like to work for themselves. But, man, there's something about the courage to do that. In terms of what makes me different, I think that the number one characteristic that I have that has helped me throughout my life, not just in entrepreneurship, is grit. Or persistence, right? Calvin Coolidge once famously said, persistence alone is omnipotent. And more recently, there's been scientific research conducted by a Dr. Angela Duckworth, and she has labeled it grit, just that resilience and that never-quit attitude.
So courage and grit, is that the absence of fear or the management of fear?
I think it's absolutely the management of fear, right? I mean, they say courage isn't the absence of fear, it's the ability to drive on in light of that fear, or whatever that famous quote is.
So it's not like you've done these things without being afraid, you just manage the fear and go forward anyway.
I mean, you can't spend your life afraid. You know, you've got to be driving forward, and I'm definitely a positive. You know, I'll say I'm a positive pragmatist. You know, I like to have a positive attitude, but I'm also a realist. So I don't think everyone should be running around trying to become an entrepreneur or go without income for a year while they start a company.
Right. You're a graduate of West Point, correct?
That's right. I graduated in 1989.
Two questions for you. Why did you want to go there, and how did it shape you?
And what was the second question?
How did it shape you?
The first question is, why did I want to go there? I was 13 years old when I made that decision, and I was very attracted to the integrity and the education itself. So even at 13, my parents taught us a lot about values and a lot about integrity. So West Point fit my family values, and I thought that was super cool that they had an honor code that everyone had to live up to or leave. In terms of how it shaped me, along with my parents, who I give the ultimate credit to, West Point and Ranger School were the shaping experience of my life, and they taught me leadership and values, and Ranger School taught me resilience.
How does those traits affect your family life today?
So I'm married. I have three boys under five. I have a four, almost three, and a one-year-old. I try and model mostly my parents and the way that my father brought us up. It's only when you get older that you see how dysfunctional some other families are and how lucky you were to be raised in that caring, supportive environment. So in terms of my experiences, I am trying to raise resilient kids without being overly oppressive. You know, I try and push my kids to finish the task, whether it's buttoning their thing or climbing up onto something that they're not sure they can do it. So I do try and give them that same set of persistence skills.
So you keep talking about these core values of courage and grit and resilience. What else does it take to succeed in business life today?
I think that when I look at you got to be smart, right? And surround yourself with smart people. So you say, what does it take to be successful in business? In my business, it's all about people. And I know that's cliche, but we're a reseller. We don't make anything. We don't manufacture anything. We don't code anything. So my company is all about people.
I know that you are a big supporter of giving back. Tell us how you've been giving back.
So Thundercat in general and myself, we're very focused on helping the wounded warrior community. As you gentlemen know from our discussions earlier, I was shot by a sniper in 2006. So I'm a wounded warrior, and I realize the challenges there. So Thundercat Technology and I myself give to a variety of charities focused on wounded warriors and their families. There's a charity that called the TD Foundation or the Tom Dearline Foundation, and we help children impacted by war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And here in the States, we help the children of wounded warriors and Gold Star families. Gold Star means you lost a parent in combat.
It's nice to hear that you've taken that incident and turned it into a philanthropic kind of an endeavor. How else were you shaped by being shot?
I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and I've now had 8 years to reflect upon it. And not that I was an ogre beforehand, but I can sit here today and honestly say that getting shot by that sniper was one of the best things that's ever happened to me. It just makes me have a broader perspective on life and a better appreciation. You know, there's that, that joke, right? Every day is a holiday, every meal is a feast. I'll often call myself Tom 2.0. sort of, and everyone talks about alive days, but I think that I'm just more patient and I have more perspective.
Toughest thing you've ever accomplished?
Ranger school, no doubt, no doubt.
How about your proudest moment up till now?
My proudest moment, would have been have graduating Ranger school, to repeat it, graduating West Point. My happiest day was obviously my wedding day and the birth of my children.
Where do you want the company to be in 30 years?
30 years is a long time. I think to take it in 5 and 10 year chunks. Right now, we are looking to at other areas. We do federal IT. We might look at state, local. We're flirting with commercial.
So growing it in sideways in many directions.
That's right.
What's the website address, Tom?
The website address is thundercattech.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Tom Dierlein, who's the president and CEO of Thundercat Technology. I'd like to thank Larry Leto and Mike Mercurio for helping me with the interview today. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offutt Kerman. What is Offutt Kerman, Doug?
Offutt Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region, with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tysons Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work with in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener. And I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into two particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying. And we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying, and since then he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Right. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offuttkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offutt Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. Isabella, what is BusinessWise CPAs?
BusinessWise CPA supports government contractors, small businesses, and nonprofits with outsourced CFO and financial consulting services.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the marketing director.
And as the marketing director, what does that mean?
Well, I actually wear several hats. My primary role is to improve and extend the branding of BusinessWise CPA through referrals, client meetings, networking in the DC area, as well as supporting current client relationships.
And what do you like most about your job?
I like the most that I don't have to be at a desk all day. I'm out and about meeting new folks and learning experiences from other entrepreneurs.
Right. What makes your organization so special in your view?
I believe our added value is that we are not just a number report kind of type firm. We're very much integrated with our clients. They rely on us for all important decisions. We help them not only with the numbers, but on the future growth of the business.
And what is it that the clients appreciate most about the company?
That they can call us and they talk to the same person every time.
Okay, and who's the perfect client?
perfect client, a small to mid-size organization looking to save on a full-time employee and as well as get the added value of the consulting.
Great. What's the website for the company?
www.businesswisecpa.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Offutt Kerman. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Larry Lethal and Mike Mercurio. For this segment, we have Phil Panzarella, who's the president of a company called CPS. What is CPS, Phil?
CPS is a management consulting firm specializing in professional services from strategic planning to process and performance improvement. We help customers solve difficult problems by providing some quality people and quality solutions.
Give us an example of a difficult problem you've recently solved.
One of the examples is we actually do a lot of government contracting, and we're able to help the Army do some retrograde activity and do it from a logistics perspective to kind of streamline process to make it more efficient and effective for them in theater.
And you sound like you like what you do.
You know, I will tell you what, I have a passion for what I do, and matter of fact, I have a passion for almost everything I do, and I really enjoy it, and because it's about leadership and it's about giving people a vision and a shared, and having them feel a shared consciousness about what it is they do.
What's the most fun part about what you do for a living?
You know, one of the most fun parts that I do is working with people. I mean, that's what we all do. It's working with people, but not only here in the company, but being able to work and give back to the local community at a lot of different levels is actually a pretty significant part of what we do.
So when was the company founded?
The company was founded in January 18, 2006.
And how big or small today?
Well, right now we have about 15 full-time employees.
Is this your first time as an entrepreneur?
Well, you know, when I first left Siemens Corporation, we started a company called Capture Planning Solutions, focusing on capture and program development. And then we actually started the CPS professional services a little bit later.
What was the toughest part about starting this company?
I think the toughest part about starting the company was actually finding your first job, right? To make sure that you could make payroll and start to hiring people. And it was also the first hard part was making the decision to go do it. But once we made the decision to go do it, it was no looking back.
Well, you told us in the green room that you actually mortgaged your house.
Yeah, no, we did. I thought for sure that when the big decision we had to make was how we're going to get some of the financing and get credit cards and be able to stand up the company. And I thought for sure that I was going to ask my wife if we could go ahead and do this, and then I was going to tell her that, you know, we're going to mortgaging the company, that she was going to say no. And I was totally surprised. My wife of 35 years now looked me in the eye and she says, you know, I got more confidence in you than I think you do yourself. Go for it. And so there was no looking back at that point.
When did you realize that you were going to actually succeed at this?
You know, it was probably 6 months into it, and after we first closed our first deal. And you know what? We competed against some major companies to go after some business for some commercial clients. And it wasn't just small businesses. It was large companies. And when we won that one, it was a great feeling.
What in your background prepared you to take such a risk?
I think some of the experience that I had, leadership experience and building things, and I grew up through the military, and I learned a lot of things. And the military really is truly about change and transformation. You can't think of a more transformational environment because you're moving every couple of years, you're doing different things. And then also my business background, working with IBM and Siemens Corporation.
But I think it started earlier than that. In the green room, you were telling us about mom and dad growing up in New Jersey.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I come from a very entrepreneurial family. My dad started his own construction company, and he actually worked, and every day I used to watch him come home, and he was a role model for me. I admired what he did. He actually gave back. It would be funny because my mom, the only time they ever fought was about collecting the bills, because my dad didn't really like to do it. And matter of fact, he would go out and donate some of his services, and mom would get frustrated because she's trying to raise a family and trying to make things work and make the budgets work. And so watch that happening. It was actually it was actually pretty rewarding.
Did you actually work in the construction for a bit?
I absolutely did. I mean, we had a number of different construction things going on, and every summer I used to work in the construction environment, and I loved it. Very manual, and it was lethargic. I mean, you could actually, you know, transform things and make things happen.
Looking back on it, how do you think that experience of working with your hands, getting sweaty, shaped who you are today?
I think it was instrumental in shaping who I am today. It's all about accountability. It's about ownership. It's about, you know, character building. And you know what? The work ethic is, I think, core to all we do, no matter what job you're in.
You know, you seem to come from a wonderful family. Besides your parents, what other mentors did you have in your life that shaped you?
You know, I had probably two other key mentors that I can really mention right now. One is my football coach that, you know, we played Little League football, and I watched him build these Little League teams that were very successful. And here's a man who had no education, no background, and I watched what he did for some of the teams, and he was just a role model for me. And then another one was one of my commanders in the military that back then, In Search of Excellence, the book just came out by Peters and Waterman, and everything we did in that unit was the same way. It was like you knew what organization you were part of. You knew you were training to go to war. You knew that this was the person on your left and right that you had to have a shared vision and a shared consciousness about.
You're a West Point grad, right?
Yes, sir, I am.
Why did you even want to go there?
You know, when I was in high school, I joined junior ROTC for the Marine Corps at my local high school. And
Why did you want to do that?
You know, I was very interested. For one, it was about physical fitness. It was about using weapons. It was about leadership. It was about integrity. It was about character. And I loved wearing the uniform as well. And that was a tough time to wear a uniform, yeah, especially a military one back in the 70s. But it taught me an awful lot and really inspired me to want to go to one of the military academies.
So you were inspired to get into West Point. That's not an easy thing to get in. How'd you get it?
It is not. And a matter of fact, it was. I had to get an appointment. I had to have good grades. And they were looking for well-rounded individuals. And so I was very good in athletics. I was class president, so I had a good background that was the kind of individual I think the academy was looking for.
And how did you suppose that experience and then the subsequent time in the military shape you?
You know, I will tell you that, you know, the West Point and the military academy and then, you know, my 10 years in the military, it was really truly around leadership. It's around character. It was around integrity. And it was around building teams. And so to me, that was a firm foundation to everything that I do today.
You mentioned one person in particular who was a significant mentor to you. Why don't you talk a little bit about that guy?
Yeah, no, there was one of my battalion commanders that was very influential. And when he took over his battalion command, he had an opportunity for a new company commander. And I was a young lieutenant, and he was looking for a captain to fill the slot, and he had a couple in the unit. And I went over and asked if I could be that company commander for him. And he questioned me, and said, "You're only a first lieutenant." And my thought was that didn't matter. I mean, I thought I had the skills, the expertise, and I thought I would do a great job. And lo and behold, about a week later, he brought me over and gave me the assignment, and I was the company commander as a first lieutenant, which was a great learning experience.
So it's fun to watch you be passionate. How do you handle difficult experiences? How does a passionate guy handle defeat, for example?
You know, I will tell you, I handle defeat very well. I think I am very passionate about it. I do get excited about some of the things. Plus my heritage a little bit, it leads me to get a little excited about some of the things. But I've learned to be very calm about it now. I mean, to me, what I learned as a result of the military and actually the small business is failure does happen, right? But it doesn't mean that you're not going to be successful. It's a short-term impact that may slow you down, but it doesn't stop you from getting to the goal.
Is failure a good teacher?
You know, I will tell you, failure is absolutely a great teacher because there's so many things that we learn. And actually, my partner and I often think about all the things that have happened to us over the last 8 to 9 years we want to write a book about, because there's so many things there that come as unexpected and you think are going to stop you in your track, but they don't. All they do is make you stronger.
How does a passionate guy like yourself recharge?
You know, I will tell you, and that's a great question. My wife has been my soulmate, and she is my best friend, and we've been married for 35 years, and, you know, she has been an inspiration to me. She has probably more talent than anyone that I know, but the other thing that we get recharged on is giving back. We're involved with Easter Seals. We're involved with children. We're involved with leadership and ethics for high school students and training them. We're involved in the, you know, Chamber of Commerce, and that's exactly what we do to get recharged.
How about your proudest moment up till now?
You know, my proudest, you know, I have a ton of proud moments. I really
just
do.
I've
been very fortunate. But I think one of the things that I'm most proud of lately is that I was trying to help Easter Seals, which is a large nonprofit, support veterans and getting them to retool their skills, their skill sets to help military and their families. And that has been a success.
The website, Phil?
The website is www.cps-ps.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Phil Panzarella, who is the president of CPS. I'd like to thank Larry Letow and Mike Mercuro for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment after this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. Welcome, Shirley. Shirley, what's The Success Doctor all about?
It's a global workforce and talent management consulting organization. What we do is track trends, and we identify best practices and strategies for organizations around the world of all sizes, all industries, mm-hmm. and help them understand how to get great talent, how to keep it, and how to make sure that they get the most out of it.
And what's your role in the company?
My role is president and CEO, and I actually do a lot of the coaching and speaking and consulting.
And what do you like most about that?
Absolutely love the strategy development and helping to get leaders to that aha moment.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the organization so special, in your view?
Capturing a lot of the great best practices that we've been able to do. And I think, you know, my brand, I build great relationships, and I provide them what they need instead of what I want them to have.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the clients appreciate most about you and your company?
I make the strategies, even though they're global, I make them very, very customized and practical.
Uh-huh. And who, in your view, is the ideal client, the perfect client?
The perfect client is one that has a need, and the perfect client is one that can recognize that there is an opportunity with the strategies that we provide for them to make their organizations better.
Mm-hmm. And what do you personally enjoy most about the work?
I love seeing the strategies come to life. I love seeing the impact and the results that come as a result of it. Mm-hmm. And I love when they call me back and thank me because they've seen change.
That's excellent. And what's the website for the company?
DrShirleyDavis.com. That's www.drshirleydavis.com.
Thank you, Shirley. We've been speaking with Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight. This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Mark Cohn, founder of Cohn and Burnett, a law firm. Mark, welcome. What is Cohn and Burnett?
We are a law firm that focuses on trusts and estates. So we do wills, trusts, powers of attorney, estate planning, and estate administration.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the founder and the senior partner.
So what does it mean to be a senior partner?
Well, it means that in our case, I'm the thought leader, the visionary, the one who tries to figure out where we're headed. I'm not the managing partner who runs the day-to-day operations.
Okay, and what makes Cohn and Burnett so special?
We are, first of all, focused on taking care of our clients and just on their estate planning and administration. And I think we're one of the first firms in the area to introduce a fixed fee for doing estate planning.
Interesting. And what do they really appreciate about you and the company, your clients, that is?
You know, the clients tell me that they just love the experience. They are very comfortable and confident that their needs are being met here, and they enjoy working with us.
Hmm. And who or what is your perfect client, if you will?
Our perfect client is anybody who cares about what's going to happen to them when they can no longer take care of themselves or their family.
Mm-hmm. And what is it you actually enjoy most about the work?
You know, talking to the clients. That's the part. I could turn over all of the work to other attorneys here, but I hold on to the first part, which is meeting the clients, talking to them, getting to know them, getting to understand what they need and what they're looking for.
That's great. What's the website for Cohn & Burnett?
CohnandBurnett.com, all spelled out, the A and D in between there.
Thank you, Mark. We've been speaking with Mark Cohn, founder of Cohn & Burnett. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Offutt and Kerman. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Larry Leetow and Mike Mercurio. For this segment, we have Mike Bernstein, who's the president of a company called MCW Solutions. What is MCW Solutions, Mike?
MCW Solutions is an IT integration firm. We help companies solve their technology business problems. We go from AV, digital signage, video conferencing, audio teleconferencing, to physical security, whether it be access control, CCTV, from the data, the horizontal data infrastructure, and also IT managed services.
When was the company founded?
2003.
And how big or small would you characterize the business today?
We're between 25 and 30 million on the top line, and we have about 90 employees.
Why did you want to start this business?
Good question. I was in IT sales. I worked for a large software company, and my business partner, Gitas Ajo, he worked for also a large software company. We both always wanted to start a company together. We had a mutual friend who worked for a publicly traded residential home builder, and he said, why don't you guys start a company, and we'll give you all of our technology business for the residential marketplace. Okay. So
What was it about your partner that made him a good partner?
I trust him. I've known him since I was 18 years old, and he has similar characteristics and values as myself, and I trust him.
Is this the first time you've been entrepreneurial?
Yes.
And so up till then, what were you doing?
Before that, I worked for a large software company called Sybase, which was recently bought out by SAP. And I traveled the United States selling to Department of Energy.
Would you consider yourself a good entrepreneur?
Well, I'd like to consider myself that one. I am compassionate, and I work hard, and I want to make sure my clients are happy.
Yeah. What do you like most about it?
I like to be able to help people. We try our best. There's two stories, right? So I deal with customer satisfaction issues all the time, and I want to make sure our clients are happy. So, I'm not saving the world, but we provide good products and services.
And that's important to you?
Critically, yes.
Yeah. What about your background kind of shaped you to do this thing well?
Sure. It's a great question. So I went to school right around the corner here at University of Maryland, College Park, and it wasn't necessarily a degree that I got that helped me propel myself to where I am today. It was more of the work ethic that I had. I had little resources. I had to pay my own way. I worked for a copy place called Kinko's.
Yeah, due to circumstances, mm-hmm. which I'll let you talk about if you like, you kind of left the home at 13 and were on your own for a bit, weren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, so I left my house at 13 years old. I lived with some friends. It was fine.
So how does that experience kind of shape who you are today?
Well, I think it helps you. You have to have drive, right? If you're leaving the home that early of an age, you're going to push yourself. You have a fear of success. You want to be successful. And that fear has driven me where I am today.
So, but how does a 13-year-old figure it out?
I guess it's pretty – I don't know. I can't really – comment
trial and error?
Yeah, when I was 13, how I figured it out. I came back to the house when I was 17. So.
Looking back on it, though, I mean, if you had to do it over again, would you?
Well, I had no choice, so yeah, I guess I would. So, uh-huh. Yeah, it is what it is. So I moved out. I lived in my friend's basement, and I lived there for a couple of years, and then ultimately my mother moved to Potomac, Maryland, and I moved back to here.
Given your background, why the risk of entrepreneurship?
I don't know. I really don't know. I always wanted to own my own company. I always thought I could do a good job. I wanted to, I wanted to have happy clients. I wanted to do good work, and we do good work. So maybe that was something to do with it.
You talked about in the group not having mentors. You talked mm-hmm. about your, tough childhood. What's your best trait that makes you successful?
Yeah. Hard work. My form of success, like I mentioned, I have average intelligence. My form of success is just hard work, grinding it out. I'm not afraid to work hard. If I have to work all weekend, I'd rather work all weekend than do anything. So to me, I like the challenge of meeting C-level my clients, my C-level compatriots, and then, solving their business problems.
It's interesting how these interviews seem to have themes per show, and mm-hmm. grit seems to be the theme today. Yeah. How is grit true for you?
Nothing is given to my partner or myself. He has a similar background. We've worked hard for everything. So it is just a struggle, a day-to-day struggle. Our firm is pretty successful, but every day I feel that if we don't keep our pulse to the business and stay in tune with our clients, that I fear that it's going to go away.
You're in a business that's changing a lot too. So how do you stay current with it all?
It is always changing. So we try to hire the best that we can. We have some of the brightest folks in the Mid-Atlantic area that do what we do. My business partner really is really kind of involved in our strategic direction. I'm more of the day-to-day stuff. So we both have a technology background, and we just keep on pushing and.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if the early days where all that uncertainty was in your life at younger years kind of shaped you to be able to deal with uncertainty today.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it did, because every day is a challenge. Our employees have their stories, and our clients have their stories of how the installation went. So it's deciphering really, what is the actual facts.
What do you find thrilling about your business or entrepreneurship?
Well, I like growing. We want to be a large company. We want to get to be 50, 100 million and, have hundreds of employees, if not thousands. So we have a really good idea where we want to go. We're talking to equity partners right now. So we've been growing organically this whole time, and we want to do some strategic acquisitions.
So the person that helped you found the company is still in the business with you? You
Absolutely.
Still have a partner?
Yes, yes.
How long have you guys been in business?
We've been in business since 2003.
So that's a little bit, that's a while now.
It is.
Not all partnerships succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Why has yours?
Well, we were friends before we were partners. And
that's my point. A lot of times they dissolve.
I know, right? I don't have the answer to why. We ask ourselves that all the time. We look at each other as like, how are we still in business together? We argue like brothers, and maybe that has something to do with it.
But there's this big smile on your face. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it still works somehow. How does it work?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it's intentional. Partnerships require care and nurturing and respect and all that stuff.
Yeah, we do not... I do my thing, he does his thing. We talk every day, multiple times a day. We don't work out of the same office, but we don't overlap. So his role is his role, my role is my role. I don't question him ever. He doesn't question me, and it's worked out pretty good for us so far. I just trust him. Trust is the big point.
20 years from now, what's the end game for you?
Well, 20 years from now, I'd like to be retired and living in, you know, warm climate. We want to be a big company, but 20 years, right? I'd like to be a big company before 20 years. So, you know, keep on growing, keep on doing good work, and, you know, hopefully, you know, one day we'll probably sell in 20 years.
Where'd you learn how to lead?
I don't really have any great mentorship stories. It's just something that, you know, I really don't know. You know?
What's your definition of leadership then?
Oh, you know, I try to. I have empathy for people. You know, like I mentioned, everyone has their own stories, and mine was a difficult one growing mm-hmm. up. So I try to find that in my employees. I try to understand, you know, where are they coming from, what's their perspective.
What do you like to work for?
I like to work for money, and because
that's what you like. What yeah. Why would somebody work for you?
Oh, well, we have a great environment. We have a fantastic facility in Ashburn. There's about 10,000 square feet out there. We have the latest technology there. We have a demo lab. We have some of the best and brightest on board. So we do a lot of unique things for our clients.
Your life partner, your wife, is an entrepreneur as well.
She is.
How do you balance having two businesses?
Well, we have a son, and he's in college right now, and there's no one home, so we see each other on the weekends almost. So she comes home around 8 o'clock. I come home around 8 o'clock myself.
What's the toughest thing you've ever accomplished?
Well, the toughest thing I ever accomplished, probably my first marriage. My wife became a drug addict, and I had to raise our son when he was 12 months old by myself. That was difficult to overcome. So I overcame that, and that's in fact how I met my wife, because she was his teacher. So that was probably the biggest thing I overcame.
What did you take away from that experience?
Well, that's hard work to raise I can appreciate a stay-at-home mom, because raising a son is not easy, or raising a child is not easy, especially at 12 months old and having to deal with that and work and try to make that all work. It's hard.
How about your proudest moment up till now?
Just seeing my son graduate from high school and go to college, and, you know, more personal things than professional.
Are there any barriers too high for you to jump?
I know I often think that. Sometimes we meet with other companies, and we're taking on a 7-figure transaction, and there's a lot of moving parts tonight. Sometimes I get nervous. I mean, because we bond a lot of these jobs and personally guaranteed those bonds, but we've come through, and we always deliver. But, you know, maybe that might be a scenario that might make me nervous.
Are you always looking to get better?
Every day. Every day we're trying to think about new technologies, new angles, new things every day, especially in IT.
You move very fast. Everything you do is fast. Are you afraid to slow down?
Yes. I get up early, we work long hours. We are always nervous about our competition. We're always trying to find a unique advantage, differentiating our company and our employees from our competition.
So we have a younger audience that likes to listen in. Tell a 13-year-old that's having a tough time right now what to do.
Oh, well, yeah, you got to – when you're 13 and you have a lot of challenges in front of you, it seems like they're never going to end. It seems like that road's never going to end. But time goes by quick, as we all know, and it will get better. Just keep on doing the right things.
Persevere.
Stay away from the drugs. And you'll be fine.
What's the website address?
Sure. The website is www.mcwsolutions.net.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Mike Bernstein, who's the president of MCW Solutions. I'd like to thank my co-hosts Larry Letow and Mike Mercurio for helping me with the interviews. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment after this business spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. Welcome, Jody. Jody, what is Acumetrics?
Acumetrics is a firm that works with CEOs that are interested in growing their revenues and bottom lines in a scalable, sustainable way.
And what's your role within the company?
I'm the founder and president.
And what is it about the job that you bring that's so unique to you, that special gift, as we say?
That special gift? I enjoy working with the CEOs to have them achieve goals that they thought were impossible.
And what is it about the organization that makes it so special?
We work, our clients say that it's the three P's: our people, our platform, and our processes. Our people are highly qualified and they're fun to work with. Mm-hmm. Our processes are enabling of reliable and timely financial information, and our platform is scalable.
And who is, or what is perhaps, the perfect client for you?
Businesses of any size that want reliable, timely financial information.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I enjoy working with the clients and making a difference. We like to help the CEOs understand their financial information so they can make different choices tomorrow to impact future results of the business.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.acumetricsllc.com.
Thank you, Jody.
Thanks, Les.
We've been speaking with Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Wes Burnett, partner at Optifor. Wes, what is Optifor?
Optifor is a securities firm that integrates legal, tax, and financial and risk in order to offer optimal results for clients.
Who's your perfect client?
Perfect client is someone who actually would like to combine services, make their life simpler, and is very family-oriented. Our firm itself is very family-oriented. We love helping families take care of their own, and that can be multi-generational.
So what would a family need when they would come to you?
Typically, what they're doing is trying to simplify their personal life by trying to have somebody else worry about their legal and their tax and financial affairs, and present them with solutions rather than questions.
Solutions rather than questions. So give us an example of a good solution.
A good solution is something that results, for example, in the lowest tax bill, the greatest savings, and taking care of the values important to the family, like saving for college for children or grandchildren or something along those lines.
So what do you enjoy most about your work?
My clients. Although a second place, a close would be my staff, because I recruit very specifically people who have the same values as our clients. So we truly are very involved with our clients' lives, and they are family to us.
What about your family? Are they in the business too?
No, although there's certainly plenty of lawyers and financial advisors and so on in the business. But no, they all have their own lives, and we're very pleased, quite frankly, with that. I actually have a wife who's a teacher for 42 years, so I take a lot of my values from her.
What is the website?
Optifor.com, OPTIFOUR.com.
Thanks for listening to this Business Spotlight.
And your name is?
Dana Theus.
And the name of the organization?
EmpowerCoaching.com.
And what does Empower Coaching do?
Well, we support mid-level to senior managers mm-hmm. and leaders mm-hmm. Achieve professional success by developing themselves personally.
Why does this turn you on so much?
Well, I have found in my own experience and my own leadership journey that mm-hmm. the better I was at being a good human being, the better mm-hmm. leader and the better business I ran and mm-hmm. the more successful I was. And I want to help other people do that.
So you're able to help the folks in an organization throughout the organization achieve what they're looking for, as well as help the organization move forward.
Well, to move an organization forward, mm-hmm. you've got to master the soft skills of mm-hmm. dealing with people effectively. Mm-hmm. You've got to learn to negotiate every relationship successfully mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. both parties. Mm-hmm. You have to communicate confidently. Mm-hmm. I support people and help them learn to develop those skills themselves to be strong mm-hmm. leaders.
And you have a specialty working with women?
I do work a lot with women. Mm-hmm. They're drawn to this work, but not mm-hmm. exclusively.
Mm-hmm. And to learn more about what you're up to, is there a website address?
InPowerCoaching.com. That's InPowerCoaching.com.
Excellent. This has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Offutt Kerman. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Larry Leetow and Mike Mercurio. For this segment, we have a young lady by the name of Jennifer Bernstein, who's the founder of a company called Charmed Bar. What is Charmed Bar?
Charmed Bar is a fruit and nut bar that is free of gluten, grains, dairy, soy, and refined sugar.
And you started a company to sell this?
I did.
Why?
Because my business partner and I both have autoimmune issues, and needed, my business partner in particular, needed to find an on-the-go snack that she could have, that she could take with her, you know, when she was out. She felt like she was in the kitchen nonstop, and the market was lacking a product that was free of gluten, grains, dairy, soy, and refined sugar.
So the two of you cooked up a formula and made a bar, right?
We did.
And when did you come up with the name? Charmed Bar.
We came up with it pretty quickly. We both feel that we live charmed lives, and we wanted to spread that to everybody else. So we charm everybody one bar at a time.
And so what tell us about the moment you decided to make a business out of it.
Well, she got to a point where she couldn't take it anymore. She called me up and said, let's create a bar. I said, let's do it. We gathered all the ingredients that she could have, and we turned on our 80s music, we popped a bottle of wine, and we just created the recipes.
Okay, and then it turned out to taste pretty good, and you said, we can make a business out of this?
They taste awesome. And yeah, we're making a business out of it.
So you're an experienced entrepreneur, I take it.
Actually, I'm not. I'm a former kindergarten teacher.
So was this scary for you?
Not really. No, because I've always loved helping people. And when I was teaching, I taught a lot of kids with special needs. And this was sort of an extension of that. Just, you know, we knew that there were other people out there that were suffering with the same issue. And we just wanted to put a product out there that people could have.
Talk to us a little bit more about the extension of helping young kids. You were telling us that it's your belief that some of the young kids' problems are nutritional.
Absolutely. We really believe that the food that is out in the market these days is full of lots of chemicals and things that are not necessary to be in the food, and kids are developing issues as a result of that. And we feel that if we can cut those things out of their diets, that they would you know, that their behaviors and things that they're experiencing would be better.
What experiences in your background ingrained into you the need or the desire to help people?
So I'm one of three. I'm the oldest daughter of three, and my parents were divorced when I was young, and I just kind of took on the role as the caretaker of my sisters. My parents were both out working, and it's just sort of become who I am. I just really enjoy caring for people and helping people and, you know, making people's lives better.
Mm-hmm. And talk about how teaching elementary school kids have shaped your life.
Oh, my gosh. They're unbelievable.
And it's special needs kids, too, right?
It's both. Both, you know, typical children and children with special needs. And it's they're like no other people, little people. They say the darndest things, and they love you, and they love to learn, and they love to, you know, soak in information. And it was truly an unbelievable thing.
So are you still feeling like you're helping?
I do. We have customers come up to us all the time that just thank us for creating a product that they can eat, for creating a clean product, you know, something that's made with just real food.
You talked about changing the industry in the green room. What does that mean to you?
Getting rid of products that are full of things we shouldn't be eating. You know, putting products out there, showing the world that you can make products with just real food, that it is possible and that it tastes good, and that just because a product is free of gluten and grains and soy and dairy and refined sugar doesn't mean it has to taste bad. So, you know, that's what
we're
doing.
So I can imagine bringing this to market and getting it in stores involves skills that have nothing to do with teaching.
It does. I've learned a lot in the last year.
Yeah, like what?
First of all, failure is not an option. And you just have to have determination. You know, we don't take no for an answer. And we've had a fabulous mentor who has helped us along the way.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics, Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial.